Welcome to Pythagorean Astronomy. What you're about to hear was originally recorded and broadcast for Pythagoras' Trousers, a Radio Cardiff science show and podcast. You can hear the full show and listen to past episodes at pythagoras-trousers.co.uk. Cast your mind back to the 14th of May 2009. Down in French Guiana in South America, atop an Ariane 5 rocket was the Herschel Space Observatory and the Planck satellite.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, top.
They blasted off and the whole thing is a great success. 5 years later, I'm standing here with Jeroen Pilbrat, the project scientist of the Herschel Space Observatory. And although it's 5 years since launch and the mission in terms of the operational sense is over, it's been a lot longer than 5 years, hasn't it?
Ideas for Herschel started in the 1970s, really. Right. But in those days, I was not around. The proposal to ESA was in 1982. And in the 80s, various studies was made. And I have been involved in Herschel since 1991. So for me, 2009 was like almost 20 years of working with the mission.
Wow. And then 5 years after launch, as I said, the satellite itself turned off last year in 2013, after 4 years of operation. We've had a year of what's called post-operations, trying to get all the data working. What have we seen from Herschel so far?
One of the areas where Herschel has made an enormous impact is in our understanding of how just stars, like our own sun, form. How they are created in molecular clouds from filamentary structures that we actually do not perfectly understand the origin of, but from the filamentary structures onwards, you can see strings of stars being formed, and Herschel has made an enormous impact in imaging those clouds and identifying the structures and the pre-stellar cores that will make new suns.
Yeah. So huge advantage in the formation of stars in our galaxy and in other galaxies.
Absolutely. And that is actually something else. Because galaxies far away in the universe, you cannot observe in detail. You only like observe the whole galaxy in one go. But here, what Herschel has told us is that over the history of the universe, the star formation activity was much stronger before. The peak was perhaps 10 billion years ago, but even earlier than that, when galaxies were supposed to be small and building up towards this main peak in star formation activity, there are at least a subset of galaxies which very quickly have become monsters, forming stars like a thousand times more rapidly than our own galaxy does today. And you can find such galaxy, or at least one, but if there is one, I'm sure there are more, within the first billion years of the life of the universe. Mm. And this was not expected.
So with hindsight over the mission, how do you sum up the mission in terms of its success?
Everybody involved, and also organizations that are behind it, see it as a big success already. But the importance of Herschel is not over now. The importance of Herschel will remain for many years to come.
You've been involved with the mission, as you said, for over 20 years now.
Yeah.
So if you had to pick a highlight from 20 odd years,
my God.
Do you think you could pick?
Yeah, if I only can have one, I think I must pick when I first saw an image made on the basis of Herschel observations form on a computer screen for the first time.
It works.
It works, yes, exactly. And this was 1 month after the launch.
Wow. Yeah.
The first image of M51, as the name of the galaxy is. I think that, if I have to choose one moment when I saw that galaxy emerge on the computer screen, that's the moment.
And have there been any, well, I'm sure there have been many, but again, any surprises from the mission, any big surprises, either good or possibly bad, I suppose?
We had one serious problem during the mission. We lost one of the three instruments on board for a 6 month period, but immediately at the time when we lost it, before we knew what the problem was and so on, we were worried that could even be even worse than it was.
Yeah, and that was the hi-fi instrument.
That was the hi-fi instrument, yes.
I mean, that must have been... I know the instrument team must have been working very hard to get that working, but the rest of you in higher up in the mission, as it were, you must have been, pulling your hair out as well. But
yeah, I mean, there were many, many aspects of that, as you say. For the instrument team, this was like just changed the world, right? But they were not alone on this. Actually, there was a big collaboration between the hi-fi team and also technical expertise in ESA, doing all kinds of tests on component levels and so on. So this was really a collaborative effort to get hi-fi back again.
Now, as you can probably hear from the some of the background noise, we're not in a studio, we're in the suburbs of Paris. It's a beautiful sunny day. And a couple of days ago, or last night in fact, we had the 5-year celebration of the Herschel mission down in Paris. I took a chance to catch up with a couple of the people from Herschel. I started off with the hi-fi instrument that had the problem, speaking to the leader of the instrument team, Russell Shipman, about how that difficult phase was.
We lost half of the instrument. I don't know how many months. Yeah, it was a few months, 4 or 5 months into launch, into the mission. And we came back. We have contact with the satellite once a day. And we came back after the 20 or the 24 hours or so of observing. And hi-fi had been switched off by the satellite. I mean, the satellite did it because it said, this instrument is not healthy, so you're off.
I mean, that's got to be a low point for a...
That was an incredibly low point. My thought, I had not been involved in much of the operations. I'd been involved in the data handling and the kind of the end result of hi-fi. But the big thought, everyone was thinking, will hi-fi ever work again? And so we were thinking we had a 5-month mission. We were now over.
So decades of work for 5 months of
observing. Exactly. A true low point. But people started working. At that point, people started thinking, okay, what happened? And they pieced it together. I think in the end, they had maybe 30 seconds of time to actually tell them all the last seconds of what hi-fi had been doing.
So its final messages, the black box before it turned off, right?
Exactly. And the order in which everything, and they were able to piece together this a very detailed detective story of what happened. Well, they call it now, it was a single event upset, which is essentially, I don't know.
Something happened.
Something happened.
Something bad, yeah.
Something from the heavens on high happened, and it caused this event. But they occurred throughout the rest of the mission. But by that time, we knew how to deal with them.
The hi-fi instrument has got this very high-resolution spectrometer that lets us see the far infrared light in all its glory, splitting into its colors. What's that showing us?
What it shows is our molecules. You see the fingerprints of all molecules. But better yet, you see how they're moving toward us and away from us. So you get motion.
So instead of just seeing a star or a cloud of gas, you see how it's moving.
You see how the cloud is moving toward you, how it's moving away from you, if it's collapsing, if it's expanding, everything.
So it gives us a lot more information now.
Yeah.
Now, hi-fi is an incredibly complex instrument, as all the instruments are.
Yes.
It must have been there must be a huge amount of work has gone into the instrument itself, and also all the controlling and all the analysis that's going on now.
Oh yeah, decades. Decades. I think they started to work on the idea of hi-fi well before launch. And then, and we are now still, 1 year after the cryogen is gone, we're still working on the data to get it into its final format.
I'm joined now by Tony Marston, so you're the calibration scientist from Herschel, which means you make sure all the data is exactly right, all the numbers are correct in the data. Is that, it might be a stupid question, is that an easy task, or...?
Well, not for these instruments. They are intrinsically not stable. So we have to work out how we can make sure that an instrument that's not stable, it's not always measuring exactly the same thing, it's not responding exactly the same way to the light that is falling on it. You have to work out how you can determine exactly what its response is giving you. All you're getting is an electrical signal from it.
So every detector gives you a voltage, essentially.
It gives you a voltage or something like this, and you have to turn that into how much light is there at that wavelength that it's interested in the infrared. How much is that in some terms of energy? How much energy has come every second that's landing on this piece of material?
And if you had to pick one surprising thing, the most surprising thing that happened while you were working on Herschel, what would you say that would be? The most surprising thing from the whole mission?
From my point of view, in actual facts, there weren't that many surprises.
Which is good, right?
Because I felt that we really thought about things before we started. Perhaps a bigger surprise that in coming into the agency, because I actually worked for NASA before coming to the European Space Agency. In the European Space Agency, we've got people from all over Europe that are involved in this. I mean, we have a multinational group in the Herschel Science Centre where I work. My own team had no other English person. I've got a Hungarian, a Bulgarian, I've got two Spaniards, two French, and there was myself. Just recently we've hired another English person, which is the first other person in the group. And you can ask yourself, how does that group work? And the interesting thing, and I think one of the biggest things that I found, is that fairly quickly when you come into this business, when you're working in that group, nationalities just are completely forgotten. All you tend to care about is whether that person you can work with, you can interact with, and they do a good job. And I had a fantastic team. I have thoroughly enjoyed working with them, and we've had a great time, and there has never been a problem. So it's been great working in this grand European, pan-European operation. They really do work. I mean, if you haven't tried it, it's an amazing experience to go into an organisation that is multinational like that, and where people are just working for the project. They're not worried about where the other person's come from. It's great.
To try and get a feel for the wide range of results produced by the Herschel Space Observatory, I thought I'd ask some of the scientists for their own personal highlight of the mission so far.
Okay, I'm John Davis from Cardiff University, and my personal highlight of Herschel, I think, is seeing our very first data. We had the most fantastic far-infrared data from the Spire instrument, and when we covered a large area of a nearby galaxy cluster and we could image in detail at high spatial resolution some of the most beautiful galaxies in the universe.
Hi, I'm Dave Clements from Imperial College London. My highlight of Herschel so far is the discovery of a galaxy called HFLS3, which is the most distant, dusty galaxy known, at a redshift of about 6.3, which means that it's only about 900 million years after the Big Bang. And it's got lots of really interesting properties. It's full of molecules, it's full of dust, it's clearly gone through generations of star formation, which have enriched its interstellar medium. And that's why we see it with Herschel, because it's got lots of dust, it's forming stars very quickly. And we see all the dust that's coming from those star formation regions.
Hello, my name's Mike Barlow. My personal highlight from the Herschel mission for our team was the discovery of the argon H+ molecular ion in the Crab Nebula. This represented the first detection of a noble gas molecule in space, and it was in the Crab Nebula, a supernova remnant, the last place we would have expected to find a new molecule.
My name's Derek Ward-Thompson. I've worked on the Herschel mission for the last 5 years. My personal highlight was when we saw the first data, and especially the data from the Rosette Nebula. And when we put the three wavelengths together and made a three-color image of it, it just looked so fantastic. It looked like a Turner oil painting. And just to see the sheer beauty of the data, without a doubt, that was the highlight for me.
So although Herschel is a European mission, there's strong involvement from North America. I'm joined now by Bernhard Schultz from NASA's Herschel Science Center. So Bernhard, now your main involvement is with the Spire instrument. Could you tell us briefly what Spire does?
Well, Spire is the longest wavelength instrument on board of Herschel. It is half of it is a photometer, the other half is a spectrometer.
So the photometer is a camera that takes the pretty pictures, if you like, and the spectrometer does the detailed analysis of what the stuff out there is made of.
Yeah, you can also see it in a different way. A photometer is a kind of a very low-resolution spectrometer.
Right. So this is the equivalent of looking at a bright nearby galaxy. If you're looking at invisible light, you'd take a red picture, a green picture, and a blue picture, essentially. And we do that in the far infrared and the submillimeter.
Exactly. That's what we do. We do it at 250 micron. 350 micron and 500 micron with the photometer. So that's effectively a camera. What we see mostly with the photometer is dust. a little bit of gas as well, and gas emission and so forth, but most of it is really dust. And the most amazing thing, actually, that struck me very early in the mission when we got our first images, there was all this stuff in the background, right? And we had sources, and we saw all kinds of sources, but then there was a lot of little things in there, and well, we looked closer, and yes, this was all real, and these are all galaxies. This is the dust in all these very, very far away galaxies that we see, which is I find quite astonishing, considering that such a galaxy has something. Let's just throw out a number: a few billion suns. Okay, yeah. One of these little blobs of these, say, a few hundred that are just in a small map, has so many suns. Each of these suns has planets, and so forth and so forth. So just gives you another perspective of the vastness of the universe.
It's kind of mind-blowing, right? Absolutely. I mean, if you stop to think about it too much, your head explodes.
Yeah.
In you said you've been involved for 12 years. In all that time, do you reckon you could pick a personal highlight from the mission, from before launch, from during the mission, or from now after the mission has gone on? A personal highlight.
Personal highlight. What I just described is such a personal highlight, because you kind of really think of, you start thinking about this, and it gives you a bit of an insight. I would say, the launch as such, although I did not attend it personally, but the launch as such was really, you think about this, and then of course the next thing is when the first light, when you try things out, and you have worked for so long, this moment where you actually see that it really, really works, and no major flaws, and the whole thing does actually what it's supposed to do, that is a very rewarding moment, particularly if you have by that time invested something a bunch of years and work on this.
Much of the discussion taking place here in Paris about the legacy of Herschel is how to make sure that future generations of astronomers will be able to understand the data and the images and use them to their full capacity. Of course, that requires explaining everything that's been going on in the best way possible. As a testament to that, I'd like to finish with a script written by John Brumfitt describing Herschel, as read by Dave Clements, and with apologies to the late Professor Stanley Unwin.
Once a Polytito in the early Maudy, ESA launched it of the Herschel Space Telescopers in Kourou. Roar, and all lifty upmost into the sky bold, injecty how in the orbit around the Lagrangey 2 bold. At through and halfy metrode's diamole, the mirror all collecty of the light from disty bodes in the fundy mold, and focusy down on the instralopers. There collected of the datode on boardy, and send it trickly how down to the ground stoper, all bouncy round with the kangaroopers there. Herschel was fitty most with through instralobes, for observe it the star loaders all glittery in the sky bold. For the far infraroders and submillimold need it to coolie the instralopers down and all freezy in the cryolode. After 4 year bold circly roundy most in space, all fuller-loped out the heliopers and endy the life. Deep folly. So fiery up the engine there and place it in orbit all twiddly round the sun. Astromoders analyse it of the datode and find much joy in the understanding of the deep workies of the fundy mould all twinklet in the skybold. Deep joy. Oh, yes.